you're in the 06010.
Watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN's Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app. And if you're listening to the podcast, through the audio feed, today's show was presented by Geico. You can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcasts. And with that, we say happy Wednesday, August 25th. Field, Matthew, Stefania, Daniel, all here. It is a full boat. And we got some news today, plus double trouble. We'll finish off the NFC West. San Francisco 49ers, Stefania's favorite, and also the Seattle Seahawks. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. How are you?
Never better. You talk some football?
We can talk some football.
Okay, because we have a couple big pieces of news to lead off.
I know.
Yeah.
Stuff, one that you predicted, one that you denied. You're batting 500, honestly. You're one for two.
Yeah. We're looking at it. I could be better. Just, but that would put me into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I guess it would be.
Yeah, so I can
unless, have you done steroids?
Are you looking at me right now?
I'm just asking. Well, because Baseball Hall of Fame, that maybe if you've done, you know, if you've done points, maybe that's. I'm just saying, like maybe
you
wouldn't
the bar.
Be.
That's what I'm saying. What? Like, I'm not exactly like, you know, I don't look like.
I've seen your college
bodybuilding Jay Cutler.
I know, but yeah. I've seen your picture.
Bulky.
You're very very bulked up in college.
Drank a lot of body armor back in the day. Getting back into it now.
Nice.
So let's get to the news because we do have a lot to get to. And let's begin in Jacksonville, Stefania. Yesterday, we learned, late Monday night, we knew that Travis Etienne, the Jaguars' first-round pick out of Clemson, along with Trevor Lawrence, of course, had a mid-foot sprain. What we didn't know was the timetable. Yesterday, we got all sorts of additional information. What more can you tell us about Etienne's status?
Well, Field, when we talked about Etienne yesterday, we heard that he was undergoing more testing. And just for people who might be wondering, just a little synopsis of what kind of things they might be looking at when you're talking about a midfoot sprain. I had tweeted that it would be a big deal to assess whether it was stable or unstable. And they do testing on the midfoot to load it, basically to stress it under load and see if they get separation or instability. And they can do weight-bearing x-rays. They now have things like weight-bearing CT scans. So you would assume those are the kind of things that they're looking at for ATN. And the Lisfranc ligament, we hear this term, Lisfranc sprain, it makes people nervous, but it's a big ligament that connects bones in the midfoot. And when it's severely damaged, that's when you get instability. And why is that a problem? Because you can't transfer energy from the back of the foot to the front of the foot. So it makes it difficult to walk, much less run, if you don't have stability in your arch. And Maurice Jones-Drew, who had this injury, told me once, it's like walking and sinking into sand when you're on hard ground, if you don't have stability in the middle of the foot. And that's why you get it fixed if you do have a significant injury.
And of course, by being placed on injured reserve, that means that Travis Etienne is out for the year. But Stefania, let's talk long term, because it's a running back. He plays a position that probably requires you to have good balance and good footwork more than any other in the NFL, or at least one of the most important positions for it. What does this mean for his outlook long term, beyond 2021?
You know, I think the outlook is pretty positive, and I really I hate to see when people start assuming, oh, young guy, and we talk about this injury, and all of a sudden it's career threatening, or he'll never be the same, and that's just not fair. There was a study published in American Journal of Sports Medicine a few years ago that showed that over 90% of players who have this injury will return to the NFL. So the chances of him returning are great. He's also young, and he doesn't have NFL mileage on him, so we don't know yet what he can be. If you think about a young player who had this injury, different position, but still very dependent on speed and mobility, was Hollywood Brown. And he had this injury and had surgery in January of the year in which he was drafted and was able to participate in training camp and play during that season. Now, he said that he didn't have his full speed really until another year, and that's sometimes the case. But if you think about where Etienne is in the calendar, we're in August. And if he has a surgery soon, by the time you get to OTAs, he could actually be participating in some form. And it's really acclimation to building up acceleration and volume that makes you able to be successful. So I think there's a very positive outlook for Travis Etienne.
Great news there about the long-term future for Etienne. And just for those that are having trouble keeping up with all of the injured reserve rules in the NFL, because he was placed on injured reserve yesterday, Travis Etienne is officially done for the season. Not that it was likely for him to come back anyways. But let's talk about this, Matthew, for 2021 and what it means for the Jaguars' backfield.
Sure.
First off,
by the way, disappointing in that, look, football is a violent sport, and we know that. But, you know, we're not even to the third week of preseason, I mean, I whatever. There was a Hall of Fame game. But, yeah, you know, like the main third week of preseason, and we've already lost two running backs for the season. Right. Yeah, obviously, stuff. After Cam Akers, now we lose Travis Etienne. So it's just, you know, you feel bad. You feel bad for the young man and his family. So excited, a first round draft pick, you know, all the talent in the world. And so you wish him and his family the best.
No doubt. And we expect him to come back in a major way in 2022. And this is a player who is, Stefania said, very young. Him and Trevor, yep, of course, teammates for 3 years at Clemson. Those guys should have a bright future together in Jacksonville as well. So it's impossible to just pivot and say, hey, but let's get right to the fantasy football talk. But for the purposes of this show, let's dive into what it means for James Robinson and perhaps, but unlikely, Carlos Hyde. Robinson was a player that when they took ETN, James Robinson, it was sort of like, why? Right? I mean, why, yeah, from a football need standpoint? You had a really good player. So now that Travis Etienne will not be available for this year, opportunity appears to be there again for James Robinson. Last year, he finishes RB5. RB5 is an undrafted rookie with, I would argue, pretty easily, much worse circumstances around him. How high does he catapult in your rankings now?
Yeah, so I moved him all the way up to running back 14. So here's the thing. James Robinson was fantastic last year. Obviously, he was one of the biggest stories in fantasy football. Undrafted free agent, undrafted in most fantasy leagues, but due to Leonard Fournette getting released and some injuries ahead of him, he suddenly finds himself at the top of the depth chart and performs amazingly well on a Jaguars team that didn't have a lot to smile about last year, but James Robinson was certainly part of it. Okay. One of the things that sort of helped his fantasy value last year, of course, was volume. Like, this is a guy who got over 20 touches per game, 20.6 to be exact, third among running backs. Like, just massive volume.
Yeah.
And he was a true three-down back. I mean, he did not come off the field. He had 10 different games with at least three catches. That was tied for the third most among running backs. So just consistent and very consistent throughout the season and also tons of volume. I don't think he gets the same kind of volume he does. I agree with you. I think the Jaguars will be better. I think their offensive line is underrated. I think, obviously, with Trevor Lawrence under center, I think they will move the ball better this year and be in scoring position more often. But I don't know that he becomes the focal point of the offense the way he was before. I think they're going to be more pass-heavy than they were. Now, again, he's a three-down back, so he's on the field. But Carlos Hyde, I believe, gets some work. Now, is Carlos Hyde a threat to James Robinson? I don't believe so. I believe he is more depth than not. But I don't think Carlos Hyde is sitting on the sidelines holding a clipboard, you know, just, you know, sitting there doing nothing but, you know, high-fiving James Robinson when he comes off the field. Like, Carlos Hyde still has some gas left in the tank. He performed well last year when he got a chance and an opportunity. Obviously, goes to Jacksonville to be reunited with his college coach, Urban Meyer. So my expectation here is that if I'm sort of projecting out the touches here for Jacksonville, I think that James Robinson gets, you know, 70% of the running back touches, not like 90%, which is what he got last year. Even though the offense has improved, the volume comes down. For me, he's in upper mid-tier RB2. Again, I am at RB14.
Yep, I'm just behind you at RB15. Daniel has him at RB16. I think we see it all the same way here. I don't think that Carlos Hyde is going to be cracking any rankings for anybody this year. Maybe like RB50 or 48 or something.
I ranked him in the low 30s. Really? I think he, for two reasons. I think he gets some work.
Okay.
And I also think, again, as we sort of like, this is, my rankings are based on my draft philosophy.
Okay.
Right. So like at the end of the year when they do, you know, some people do these accuracy rankings, right? You know, and the people that have James White, right, or JD McKissick at like 37 will be, quote, more accurate than me. Like, those guys will more than likely have more fantasy points than Carlos Hyde. But if anything happens to James Robinson, Carlos Hyde becomes a top 20 running back, becomes very usable for 50. There's no scenario in which James White or JD McKissick or Nyheim Hines or, you know, even Giovanni Bernard, the guys that are in that range, become a top 15 fantasy running back. There's just no scenario in which that happens. Something happens to Damian Harris, it's going to be Ramondre Stevenson. It's not going to be James White show.
Right.
You know, and so I would rather, when I'm filling out the end of my bench, when I am drafting, and that's what my ranks are based on, my draft philosophy, I would rather take a flyer on a guy like Carlos Hyde, whether it's insurance because I have James Robinson or because, you know, I want that the potential upside. Because I still think Carlos Hyde can play football.
Seems like the A.J. Dillon strategy then.
Yes.
I mean, not as talented of a player as A.J. Dillon is right now, but a A.J. Dylan type mentality when it comes to your draft
Again,
and your rankings.
When Chris Carson was out, Carlos Hyde was useful.
He was. He was
good
last year.
You know what I mean? Like, so just anyway, I think people have been wanting to throw dirt on the fantasy coffin of Carlos Hyde for a number of years. And every single year when the guy gets an opportunity, he produces. Is he amazing? No, he's not. But I think if anything were to happen to James Robinson, he would have immediate value.
All right, let's talk about Sony Michel, who early this morning, first reported by Adam Schefter, who was up early he's always up early. He's Schefty, reported that Sony Michel, Patriots running back, will be traded to the Rams. The Patriots will receive two conditional picks in this trade. We sort of timed this up poorly, right? Yesterday, we do Double Trouble on the Rams. We could have just made this one big conversation.
Oh, and yesterday, by the way, the fantasy show on ESPN Plus, we did our running back special where I talked up Daryl Henderson, who was on my love list. Yeah. So, yes, this is poor timing all around. It's almost as if NFL teams don't care about our fantasy needs. As if they're not paying attention to our fantasy content schedule. And they're just sort of doing things at their own pace for their own good.
Yes. And as we discussed yesterday, I think Stefani felt this way too. Like, I just had reservations that the Rams were ever going to commit Daryl Henderson being a full-time back, in part because I think I used this term this way. I coined it this way. Like, there have been many more indicators that they don't want him to be the full-time workhorse than there have been indicators that they do want him to be the full-time workhorse. And this is a trade that basically confirms that, right? Sony Michel will never or has not lived up to the draft status. He was a 31st overall pick. And I should be clear, other than what was a good rookie season and an amazing playoffs when the Patriots won the Super Bowl, he was awesome in those three games. But since then, has not been the player that many hoped he would be when he was taken 31st overall. But he's a good, solid player, Matthew. He averaged nearly 6 yards per carry last year and has looked good this preseason, has looked a little bit more adept as a pass catcher. And I think if I were to, and I'm not Mike Clay, but if I were to project touches leaders amongst Rams running backs going into this year, I think Sony Michel leads them in total touches. However, I think he leads them in total touches. However, Daryl Henderson has more explosive plays and more receiving opportunities in this backfield because he's probably better at both of those things. So along those lines, when I was recalculating my Henderson and Michel rankings, Henderson for me went down to running back 27. Michel moved all the way up to running back 35 based off of this trade yesterday, because I think these two are going to be the guys in the backfield. With all due respect to Jake Funk and Xavier Jones, like, I thought that was more sort of like that's potential rather than, I would say, promise. Your thoughts?
Sort of agree with you, sort of don't.
Okay.
So here's the part where I agree with you. They clearly wanted depth. They clearly wanted depth, and I think the thumb injury sort of like maybe, you know, gave them a moment where they're like, excuse me
for a second. Sorry. Bless
Was that you impersonating the Rams, or did you actually sneeze?
That's incredible.
Sorry. Well, it came, and then it had to come out.
We should get some scientists in here. There probably hasn't. That's like the, when like the Arctic shelf kind of falls apart, and you see, you know, there's probably like dust in there that hasn't been around since 1847 or something like that.
Probably something, right? Yeah, something like that. So anyway, apologies to everyone watching at home. Hopefully, we can clean that up for the
socks
for the podcast. I appreciate that.
Argyle.
Yeah, those are nice socks. I like.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So let me try to reset here because the poor video team is now trying to figure out how they're going to make a video out of this for Sony Michel.
Oh no, we got a great video of you sneezing. Don't worry, we know exactly how to make a video out of
great.
That. Yeah,
that's fantastic. Yeah, great. All right, here's my take on this trade. First off, I think it is more depth. I think to your point, like the thumb injury to Daryl Henderson, sort of like a wake up call a little bit to the Rams, where they're just like, yeah, if something happens to this guy in season, all we've got is Xavier Jones and Jake Funk, and maybe we want some depth. And we talked about this. But to the question of who is the, quote, guy, Daryl Henderson, I think, does not lose a ton of value here. Like, I lowered him in my ranks, but I have him higher than you. I ranked him, I believe, 23. I have him running back 23 now. Like, I prefer him to Josh Jacobs. Just to give an example.
Really?
Right. Yes, I have one spot ahead of Josh Jacobs. Because, look,
I'd board bet that for the record.
We'll do that at the end here. Yeah. We'll do that here at the end. But I prefer him. I think he's obviously got more big playability. I think he's got more pass-catching ability than Sony Michel, obviously. Sony Michel strikes me as being, like, fulfilling the Malcolm Brown role.
He's better than that. More explosive than that, for sure.
He might be, but
he definitely is.
He's still going to be, I don't think they're going to use him. The Rams, I don't think the Rams are going to use Sony Michel more than they used Malcolm Brown last year, is my take on it.
Okay.
Is my take on it.
I think they will because they have to with no Cam Akers.
Yeah, maybe. Like, Sean McVay has usually been a... There's a couple things about Sean McVay. He has usually been a one running back guy, right? Like, last year he wasn't.
Right, he was not. Yeah. I mean, he had Todd Gurley before that, so I don't have a good read on him like that.
Yeah. He was with Washington as well. But what I would say here is that he's also a player's guy, right? Daryl Henderson's been in the, you know, Daryl Henderson, he's a player's coach, and Daryl Henderson's been in the locker room now for a couple of years, and that doesn't sound a great message to players when you suddenly go out and trade for a guy, you know, who, by the way, was fourth on the depth chart in New England to, like, replace him.
It's the Rams. They trade all the time. Come on. Jalen Ramsey, Kenny Young, they've got a pretty strong track record of trading for players.
1,000% of trading for players. But my point is that I don't believe Sony Michel comes in and is suddenly the starting running back of the Rams. I think Daryl Henderson, to your point, has more explosive plays here. I think he is much more involved in the passing game. By the way, I don't know that Sony Michel is super durable, right? I mean, this is a guy that's missed 10 games in his NFL career in 3 seasons. Has he gotten better at pass catching? Yes, but I don't think he's going to be used that much in terms of pass catching. I don't know how great he is at pass protection, because when the Patriots pass, James White is usually on the field, right? I've seen some people talk about, like, well, he's better in pass pro.
He is.
I mean, like, I think it's a very small sample size, right? Yeah. And last year as well with Sony Michel, like you mentioned, 5.7 yards per carry, 79 carries. Very small sample size for Sony Michel last year, who is, as we've said, an up and down year. Anyway, as you see it, if you're watching at home, you see it on your screen. You have Sony Michel at running back 35. I moved him to running back 38. I have Henderson at 23. You have him at 27. So we are slightly different there. That we see it kind of differently. We see basically the same in that if we're drafting a Rams running back, we both prefer Henderson to Sony Michel, but you have them a little bit closer than I do by about 4 spots. But I think at the end of the day, assuming health for both guys, Daryl Henderson winds up the year with more fantasy points than Sony Michel. I do think Sony Michel's got a chance at vulturing some touchdowns, though, which caps the upside of Daryl Henderson. I certainly see them using Michel when they get in close, and they do like to run when they get in close.
A fourth-round pick, by the way, for a one-year rental is pretty expensive for a running back. Fourth-round pick. I thought that was instructive from the Rams. But
Rams, like, I don't think they have a pick until 2035 or something. I mean, the Rams
need first round picks.
Throw
you
them
just
around.
Trade for former first
I know,
round
they're
picks.
They're just exactly.
We got to move to the Seahawks in 1 second.
There you go. But one last thing here, I say Daryl Henderson finishes with more fantasy points than Josh Jacobs.
I say Josh Jacobs finished with more fantasy points than Daryl Henderson.
Put it on the board.
What a win for me! All right, time now for some double trouble.
Double trouble.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
We're going to get to the future Super Bowl champions in just a few minutes. That being, of course, Stefania's 49ers. But we begin in Seattle, where a tale of two seasons took place in 2020. Russell Wilson was quarterback 6 on a points per game basis last year. At one point of the year, it felt like he was going to be quarterback 1 with like a 30-point gap between the next quarterback and him. Russell Wilson last year started off the season with 5, 5, and 4 touchdown passes in his first 3 games, Matthew.
He was ridiculous.
He was incredibly hot. Everybody knows the stat.
And none of that counts the touchdown pass he threw to Daniel Dopp.
That's right, which
that's
is,
accurate.
Again, his career highlight. Like, for a guy that's accomplished a lot on and off the field, throwing a pass at Daniel, his career highlight. A touchdown pass at that. This is amazing, though. For as great as Russell Wilson was and is, by the way, this offense fell off a cliff in a way that I can't recall an offense playing at the level that it was falling off that precipitously in the course of a season. Over the last 8 games, make it 9 if you include the playoffs, Russell Wilson did not have a single game with more than 250 passing yards. Not one. Russell Wilson could do that in a half. He's that good with that kind of weapons. We've never seen anything like what we saw from them last year. That being said, Matthew, from fantasy standpoint, like, Russell Wilson kind of is what he is, right? Like, the ceiling is literally quarterback 1, but the floor is like quarterback, I don't know, 7 at worst.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's exciting to me. So Russell Wilson made my love list. I'm at QB 5. I was a top 5 fantasy quarterback here. I'm higher than consensus. He's going around QB. He's going as QB 7.
Yep.
He's going later in the overall than I would take him as well. I think the Seahawks are one of those offenses that could explode this year. Understand they have a new offense coordinator, Shane Waldron, who came over from the Rams. He was part of the Sean McVay coaching staff. He's now going to be calling the plays for Seattle. Obviously, Pete Carroll always loves to run the ball. And for all the let Russ cook jokes, I do think this is an offense that takes another step forward this year. And you saw the potential of Russell Wilson, to your point, in the first 8 games last year when he was just all world. So my expectation here is that given both the fact that he's a high floor and high ceiling player, I prefer him. I have him at 5. And honestly, I would not be, if you took him anywhere in the from 3 on, I'd be fine. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's Mahomes and Josh Allen. But anywhere after those two guys, if you took Russell Wilson, I totally get it. Just by the way, 513 rushing yards last year. So hopefully that continues. That was his most since 2017. That's a piece of it. But another year with DK Metcalf, who really exploded last year. Obviously, Tyler Lockett got paid in the offseason. They add Gerald Everett, who I think is going to be an underrated piece for this team.
Talk about him in a second.
Yeah, we're going to talk about him in a second. But just all in on Russell Wilson this year. Again, he was a love for me. I am higher than him on the consensus. It's amazing to me that he's going as QB7.
Safe, safe, safe when it comes to Russell Wilson in fantasy football. Let's move to the running backs, Matthew, where it gets a little bit more interesting. Actually, you know what? Let's do that in a second. But first, a word from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home?
Sure you do.
And I bet it can be hard work. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Fantasy football season right around the corner. That means more of what you love. The teams, the rivalries, the stats, the trash-talking friends, and your favorite fantasy stars like Kyler Murray, Christian McCaffrey, CeeDee Lamb, Baker Mayfield. They all rely on Body Armor to get them to the next level and perform at their best and give you the trash-talking points you need. Hey, this fall is a great time to up your game as well. Body Armor has got you covered. Everybody is focused on staying active and healthy, and hydration, an important part of that. Everyone knows that. It's more than just a sports drink. It's made with potassium-packed electrolytes, antioxidants, and there's no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. Now through December 31st, buy any one Body Armor product, upload your receipt to www.bafootballtailgate.com. Go to bafootballtailgate.com. You'll be entered for a chance to win one of hundreds of amazing prizes for your next tailgate. So basically, go to bafootballtailgate.com. You get entered. They're giving away thousands and thousands of amazing prizes. It'll be for your next tailgate. No purchase is necessary. Void where prohibited. It's open to residents of the United States, 18 and older.
People probably know this, but when you say B-A, like not B-E-A, B-A, like the letters B, letter
right?
A, there you go.
Right, Body Armor.
Body Armor.
I have to tell you, my kid, my 17-year-old son, who is turning, my 16-year-old son who turned 17 on Thursday.
Ooh.
Drinks nothing but it. Drinks nothing but Body Armor.
He is jacked accordingly.
Yeah. I'm aware of. Yeah. I'll just leave it at that. Kid 17. You know what I mean? Like, but what I'm aware of.
Can I tell you just a real quick story?
Sure.
Last night, Manny, my girlfriend's son, came downstairs and he had already had 2 of the Body Armor waters, and he came down to get another one, and Rosie was like, "You've already had 2 today. Drink peasant water. You can have 2 more tomorrow." Because he was just going through it too fast. Because he loves it. It tastes so freaking good. So,
Yeah.
Ooh, wow. You know, it's delicious.
That's all
drink
I'm saying.
Peasant water.
Drink peasant water. Yeah, drink it from
do
the
you guys
tap.
Have a lot of bottles of peasant water,
we
too?
We don't. No. No, we don't have a lot of peasant water.
Sounds like you might need to go stock up on some peasant water.
We might need to.
Otherwise, man, he's just going to go
some more Body Armor. That's what I need to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the two.
Let's keep it rolling here with the Seahawks. Chris Carson finished last year as RB11, 15.7. Points per game. However, just 12 games played. I want to turn to Stefania here for a second, because Stefania, this is a player who is really talented, just finished his 4th NFL season, re-signed a 2-year contract with the Seahawks. Feels like he's banged up a lot, though. And in some cases, it leaves him no worse for the wear. He still produces. But his physical running style does seem to be something that invites contact. Is that fair?
Yes, I think, but those are the running backs that we look for, right? And he's super productive when he's on the field. I don't think he's missed as much time. We've talked about this with him before. For some reason, there's a perception around him.
Remember, he got hurt at the end of the season a couple of years ago.
Right.
That's part of it.
And it was a big injury, right, but it was hip, at the very end of the season. He came back and he was absolutely fine. I remember coming into that year, a lot of people were like, well, we don't know. And I think the Seahawks, just sort of the way they utilize their running backs, contributed to that somewhat, right? Because it almost seemed like they were deciding who was going to be the starter, and they had Rashad Penny, and then there were injuries there, and so it was never really clear who they were relying on, and it felt like it was too much focus on Chris Carson when he had the injury. So he did miss a few games last year, but he also had an incident where he got hit and rolled up on him. We thought it was going to be much worse than it was, and he ended up bouncing back from that. So I think Chris Carson, for the position that he plays and the style that he plays, has actually shown himself to be pretty durable.
Yeah, he is a very, very talented player as well, Matt. The guy is an absolute, he's a tone-setting runner, is what I always describe him as. The kind of guy that you're playing defense against Chris Carson, and you wish that you were not a professional football player on that day. But let's get to his value, Matthew. I know you love Chris Carson. You've always felt like he's a little bit underrated and underappreciated in fantasy. You've got him at running back 13. I'm at 17, same place as Daniel. So, again, splitting hairs here. We're not down on Chris Carson. However,
but
I think
we're all, listen, his ADP is running back 19. Does it on ESPN. Like, he gets so disrespected. So we're all higher on consensus than on Chris Carson. I'm just really high on him. Like, again, I am at running back 13. He's going as running back 19. He is a love for me. He is always a love for me. He always makes me look good. He is money in the bank when he's on the field. Like, right. He is productive. Yeah. I think the questions about Chris Carson are this. Can he stay healthy? And is he, quote, the guy? Because it felt like for a while there, you know, they used the first round pick on Rashad Penny.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he didn't come in, Chris Carson did not come into the NFL with a pedigree the way some running backs do. I believe he was a 7th-round pick out of Oklahoma State.
Yep.
So, see, he just didn't have the pedigree.
I'm actually really proud of you, Matthew, that you knew
really
that.
Good. Yeah. And so, me too, by the way. That was an upset. But here's what I will tell you. Chris Carson runs hard with authority, and I think he's answered both those questions. You just heard Stefania talk about the fact that in terms of, like, I think he gets more of an injury-prone tag than he actually is. He's played 41 games over the last 3 years, which is the same as, like, you know, it's more than Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey. Some of those are, you know, they missed full years, but, like,
right.
I'm just saying, like, you know, he's played one less game than Aaron Jones. All these guys that are being drafted way ahead of him, that no one has any injury concerns at all, and he's played as many games over the last 3 years as they have. And so I get that he gets banged up a little bit. He runs to contact, and he has a hard-charging style, but he got paid this offseason.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that answers the question of, is he the guy? And as we talked about with Russell Wilson, I think the Seahawks are going to be one of those offenses that we're talking about a year from now that took the next step and is really, really explosive. And so the other positive of Chris Carson is his passing game usage keeps improving. His receptions per game have improved every single part of his career. Early in his career, he was just a first and second down thumper. He's now a big part of third down as well. I think he will continue to be. Not the full third down back. They have some other guys like DJ Dallas, et cetera. But
Travis Homer.
But, like, he gets enough pass catching to make him viable. Again, I'm at running back 13. I'm a big believer in the Seahawks offense this year.
Yeah, for a guy who finishes drives for them, he gets all their goal line work. For a guy that is a good pass catcher, like you said, for a guy that is a good, talented runner, the reason why I'm a little bit lower on him relative to other running backs that we're talking about that skill set is that, whether by design or just by coincidence, he does not frequently have workhorse games. He had 0 games last year with 20 carries. 0. So not a 1. I think he had, I want to say it was like 1 game with more than 75 rushing yards all of last season. So super efficient when he gets opportunities, just not getting quite the opportunities that guys who are ranked like an Aaron Jones or a Nick Chubb or players that might have slightly more work week in and week out. Let's get to the wide receivers, Matthew, and we're talking about two of the very best in fantasy, in real life, period. Let's start with DK Metcalf, who last year was wide receiver 10. He had 83 catches for 1,303 yards and 10 touchdowns. But again, Jekyll and Hyde season. His first 8 games, 8 touchdowns. His last 8 games, 2 touchdowns. I'm not concerned, Matthew. People have theorize as to what happened last year in the second half of last season. Changing of philosophy, opponents weren't necessarily that dramatically different. I mean, I thought it was like they were playing teams that were pretty good in the first half and playing teams that were pretty good in the second half too. But like, I thought they just played poorly. I thought Russell Wilson played poorly in the second half of last year.
I think that's fair. And I also think that in the second half of the season last year, there were a number, just because I remember I had DK Metcalf in the War Room League, and it was one of the reasons why week 14 last year, but like he had a couple of tough games against Jalen Ramsey, a couple of tough games against Patrick Peterson. Like he suddenly got locked up a few times by, you know, true shutdown corners. Like he had some really tough matchups over the second half of the year.
Yeah, none of that concerns me though, is what I'm trying to get to.
Oh, I agree.
I agree.
I was just trying to answer why eight touchdowns and then two touchdowns in the second. That's what happened. Is that the production fell off a little bit, but you know, and like, God, there was that one game where like he caught a touchdown pass and ran the whole distance. It was a Monday night game, or it was a national game. Remember, and then it got called back due to penalty. Like he'd done nothing. Really? I want to say it was the Jalen Ramsey. It was either the Cardinals game or a.
I just remember the game where he caught Buda Baker from
20
yards.
Oh yeah, which was unbelievable. Which is also amazing. But there was one where he had a long touchdown called back due to penalty, which was sort of like this ticky-tack holding penalty on the other side of the field. I remember that drove me crazy. Anyway, because I had a lot of DK Metcalf last year. So
I'll just say, yeah, I just would lock
very
him in.
Attuned to
locked
that.
In wide receiver one, a player that has as much touchdown upside as basically any wide receiver other than Devontae Adams because of his skill set down the field and also the fact that in the red zone he is a terror. Would like to see a little bit more consistent volume. He did have eight games last year with four or fewer catches, but I think that will increase year over year. He still, by the way, is only in his third NFL season.
Right. This is a guy top three in end zone targets, you know, top eight in red zone targets, to your point. Like just an absolute beast. And sometimes, by the way, when he gets a little reception, he doesn't need it because when you score on an 80-yard touchdown play,
three for 120 and a touchdown works just fine.
Exactly.
He's
right.
A beast. Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's get to Tyler Lockett though, because Tyler Lockett is going to be drafted high, Matthew. He's wide receiver 24 on both your and my board, but he's going to be maddening. He just will be. It's a fact. Every year. You look at last year's raw totals, you're thinking to yourself, wow, 100 receptions for 1,054 yards and 10 touchdowns? Now, I hate when we do this, because I'm guilty of it, but I'm going to do it right now.
Okay.
When you take away a player's best game, how would the season look? If you take away that one game last year where Tyler Lockett had 15 catches for 215 yards and two touchdowns over 15 remaining games, he had 85 catches for 839 yards and eight touchdowns. That obviously, he's a really incredible player. But we also know that from weeks 12 to 16 last year, weeks 12 through 16, very important portions of the fantasy season, in five games, 21 catches, never more than 63 receiving yards, and zero touchdowns during that stretch. Over the course of the season, he's going to be amazing. But we've had multiple years here of him being a little bit up and down, which is why I do not have him inside my top 20 wide receivers, even though if I had the opportunity to bet it, I would bet that he will finish as one of the top 20 scoring fantasy wideouts this year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think this is something that I brought up in my Draft Day Manifesto, available now on ESPN.com for free. I'm a company man.
Sorry. That was so low. There we go.
Hey!
All right.
Echo.
Finally, Tune Machine.
Anyway, what I would say is that, like, I think I want to say 46% of his fantasy points last year came from three games. He had nine weekly finishes. In a 16-game season, he had nine weekly finishes where he was wide receiver 40 or worse.
Amazing. It's amazing.
Like weeks where he killed you. Like, not... You know, not like, it was a tough game. Like
you straight up made the wrong call.
Right, exactly. Like, you would have been better off starting 39 other wide receivers.
And by the way, with him, it's never like, hey, he's going to be locked up by Jalen Ramsey this week. It's like they're playing against whoever was the worst pass defense in the NFL last year. And he still had these weird games. It was very hard to pinpoint when those glow games were coming.
He is very inconsistent. And we say this sometimes a lot, but true. Tyler Lockett is a best ball player. You know, he's much better for that, or even for deeper leagues. Again, he's insanely talented NFL wide receiver. He's one of the reasons why I really like Russell Wilson. I would have put him on my hate list this year, except I have Carson and Wilson on my love list, and I was just like, and I do believe that the entire offense takes a step up, so I ended up leaving him off of that, but I am certainly much lower on him than consensus, just like you are. You and I both have him at wide receiver 24. He's going inside the top 20 at wide receiver 19. I just won't have a lot of shares of Tyler Lockett this year, no matter, and I'm a fan of the player, I'm a fan of the person, and he's going to make Russell Wilson better, but yeah, just way too inconsistent in fantasy to be drafted that high.
Yeah, and again, as you said, amazing player. There's a reason why he got a $69 million extension this offseason. Deserves every penny of it.
But
last word here on the Seahawks is Gerald Everett, Matthew. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend... We've named several tight ends that fit into this category of guys who are like good, useful players who could be top 12 with everything breaking right. That's what he is for me. He's a very, very good athlete. The Seahawks do have other tight ends on their roster. They always do. They just brought back Luke Wilson. Will Disley is still there. We know they've always had a lot of tight ends.
Yeah.
Is this the year where one breaks through, or are you sort of like, it could, but I'm not banking
on
it?
No, I like Gerald Everett. I mean, I will say I have always really liked Will Disley, who was a thing and then got injured and just, you know, and then they signed Greg Olsen. And so it's been a tough sort of road.
Again, yeah.
Probably. Right. It's been a tough road for Will Disley. But I do think there is talent there with Will Disley. Having said that, Gerald Everett, when he has gotten, you know, an opportunity with the Rams, he has produced, to your point, athletic tight end. You're on the field with Russell Wilson. Good things can happen. They like the tight end in Seattle. And, of course, the other thing here is that you just think about it. Where was Gerald Everett last year?
L.A.
In L.A. Their offense coordinator, Shane Waldron. Where was he last year?
L.A.
I'm just saying, like, right? I mean, like, that. Like, I'm sure that Gerald Everett did not get signed by the Seahawks without them saying to Shane Waldron, what do you think about Gerald Everett? Yeah. Right? And Shane Waldron's probably like, thumbs up, get me Gerald Everett, you know? And so I do think he is an interesting sleeper. He's not currently being drafted in over 95% of ESPN leagues. I think I have him ranked at tight end 25. Like, I'm low, but of the late round tight end flyers, I think there's a better chance for Gerald Everett, at least at this point in the preseason, than Adam Trautman, who is, you know, somebody that I really like a lot, but, you know, banged up, and we're hearing, you know, Juwan Johnson, and, you know, there's some of those other guys like Anthony Firkser suddenly doesn't have as much shine, like they're using some other guys there in Tennessee. So if you're taking a flyer in that range, I do think Gerald Everett's interesting. Yes, Daniel Dopp, I call on you.
Matthew Berry.
The chair recognizes you, yes.
I appreciate that.
Yes,
I just wanted, yesterday we did a fantasy show, the running backs edition of the fantasy show. I really quickly wanted to have you talk about that and promote where people can watch it. Before we get into a quick couple of social questions, a reminder, you can tweet at us at Fantasy Focus before we get into Stefania's 49ers.
Oh, wow.
I'd be happy to. I appreciate that question. Listen, rotopass.com is a company that I own. And what I have done is I've gone around, I've gone to the six best premium content fantasy football sites, one of which is ESPN Plus.
Right.
Which obviously has all of your content, Stefania's, Mike Clay's. You can watch the fantasy show with myself and Daniel Dopp, including our running back special that just posted last night. You get Mel and Todd and everything else that ESPN Plus comes with. You get 12 months of ESPN Plus.
Dang.
You get our friend Al Zeidenfeld, who does great with DFS. So you get 12 months of ESPN Plus, plus 12 months of these five other great fantasy sites that have draft software and DFS lineup optimizers and customized ranks for whatever kind of format you play in. You play in a two quarterback, you play in best ball, you play in dynasty, whatever it is you have and you need, it's all there in terms of email alerts as well. Amazing analysis. There's some contests. It's really an amazing value. It is the best value on the internet. If you bought all these sites separately, it costs you like $400. And it costs less than $80 to do this together, especially when you use the promo code 06010. I'm just telling you, it's worth it for the ESPN Plus alone.
Wow,
so rotopass.com.
Love it. All right, we're going to do two quick social polls that we have. Our social polls are brought to you by Hotwire. Book an expensive hotel for cheap on Hotwire. Download the Hotwire app to book beyond your wildest means. All bookings final. And our first question was a poll yesterday that says, how tall is Fields Yates? Do you believe that he's 5'11" or 5'7"? We've got a poll that comes in here. Kenny's going to reveal it here on the screen. And 53% of the audience thinks that he is 5'11". 46% believes he is 5'7".
47% believe you're 5'7".
Wow. Well,
to me, I mean, that's a victory for me.
That's a victory? Interesting.
I honestly think, no, seriously.
It's like false advertising for me.
I understand that, but I'm just saying, like, you were like, it's crazy. And I'm just like, literally almost half the audience agrees.
Those are your minions. Those are your little trolls that follow you around.
I was thinking, I wondered how much was trolls and how much was people actually thought you were 5'7". We got one more Twitter question here. And Field said, he believed the Lions were going to make the playoffs. So we put up a poll. Do you believe the Detroit Lions are going to make the playoffs here in 2021?
Wow.
96.8% say no. 3.2% say yes. Again, I think there's just a lot of trolls in that 96%
totally
column, though, more
Daniel.
Than anything.
Well, yeah. Listen, in fairness, as it shows here on the graphic, the Lions have made the playoffs three separate times since 1999.
I hate you.
Is that
all right.
In Washington?
Thank you to our friends at Hotwire for
actually, hang on. Someone look that up. That might be tied with Washington. I mean, the Bruce Allen era was
deep, tough.
Was dark tough. Time. Was dark. It was a dark and stormy, you know, decade and a half or whatever it was. It was awful.
Yes, it sure was.
By the way, you can say any insult you want to me about Washington during the Bruce Allen era, and I will agree with you. Like, that's not an insult to me. I'm like, I agree. Everything you've said, I've said, and much worse. Everything you've said, I've said, but with curse words.
Yes.
Like, just, yeah, by all means.
Can confirm.
It is time now for what some are calling the most anticipated segment of the preseason. She's got her 49ers red on today. No, I mean others as well. She's got her 49ers red on today. It's time now for us to get to the 49ers section of Double Trouble. We will get the camera right on Stefania for the entirety of this segment. We begin with Jimmy Garoppolo. Stefania, how's Jimmy G looking these days?
He's actually looked pretty good. You know, when he was in camp, I thought he was executing better in the offense. He's clearly the starter as far as training camp goes. Kyle Shanahan has not veered from that. If you want to talk about his injury history, which is certainly one of the big concerns with Jimmy G, he was injured in that week two massacre that the 49ers had against the Jets last year, had a high ankle sprain. He ultimately missed 10 games across the season because of that. Remember, he tried to come back and play and then it made it worse and they had to sit him out for the rest of the season. In 2018, he had a torn ACL, but he came back from that and the team went to the Super Bowl. So they've had sort of these highs and lows with Jimmy G. I think the competition with Trey Lance coming in has certainly fueled a fire for him, and Shanahan has enjoyed seeing that. I think the plan still, everything that I can gather, is that the plan is now for them to start Jimmy G week one. I'd be surprised if that changes, and then see how things go from there. Trey Lance will be involved in the offense, but as of now, I do believe Jimmy G remains the starter, despite Kyle Shanahan saying he would not name a starter for week one. He has no reason to. They're playing Detroit.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
What the heck?
Stefania,
that was so sweet until the very end.
This is sickening.
Like a sickening. Dagger.
Can I read you guys something? Can I read you something?
I just wanted to. Oh, no, my goodness.
You take that back right now.
Rope. By the way, since 1999, Washington has had six playoff games.
No, nobody. Nobody cares.
Since 99.
How about this?
Six.
Give it to us. How about this? Ben Fox, our former ESPN colleague.
Yeah.
Great guy. Just tweeted.
Recently engaged. That's Ben Foxy. Yeah, congratulations.
Foxy.
We love Ben.
Foxy.
4 minutes ago, he tweeted the following. The Detroit Lions, yes, the Jared Goff Detroit Lions, are the NFL team with the most bets to win the Super Bowl at BetMGM Sportsbook in Michigan right now.
Look at that.
I kind
That's
of like
impressive.
Inflected downward in Michigan.
Do you want to know why? And I was going to say, wow, it's so hard to believe.
Do you want to know why?
In Michigan.
Because if you bet $20 on the Lions to win right now, you're going to win like $10,000 because that's how bad the Lions
are. Is that all you win?
Is that all you
like
win?
It's
$20. $20 is nothing.
Daniel would tattoo the Lombardi Trophy on his face if they won.
Stop it.
All right, let's get back to the 49ers. We need to talk about these quarterbacks again. So Stefania has stated that it's going to be, I think we all agree, it's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo to start the season, at least barring a late, late change of heart from the 49ers. But Matthew, I think draft strategy-wise, don't draft Jimmy G. Find a way to get Trey Lance on your roster. The upside is immense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Trey Lance made my love list. He's one of the guys that I felt like is worth stashing because the upside is so huge. Look, San Francisco has one of the best offensive lines. We know what Kyle Shanahan can do with rookie running quarterbacks. We saw it in Washington with RG3, right? He has gotten massive fantasy seasons out of quarterbacks before. Obviously, the best season of Matt Ryan's career was under Kyle Shanahan. So I think when you think about the skill set of Trey Lance, the arm and the running ability, we always talk about how important it is to get quarterbacks that can get you fantasy points both with their arm and their legs. I think Trey Lance has a chance to be something special in fantasy. And given the weapons there in San Francisco, we're going to talk about Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle and the running backs here in a second. But once Trey Sermon becomes the starter, and I think it's a matter of when, not if, but when Trey Sermon becomes the starter, he's going to be a very, very viable fantasy starter. I think a very, like, first start, he's borderline top 12, and the sky's the limit for this kid.
It's confusing because there's two Treys. You said Trey Sermon. You meant Trey Lance there, of course, the quarterback. But we get the point.
Yes, Trey Lance. Yes, sorry. Trey Lance. I also really like Trey Sermon. Yes, Trey Lance, the quarterback, North Dakota State. Sorry. Trey Lance. Did I say Trey Sermon throughout that thing?
No, not throughout. Just the very.
Just let me do it one more time just for the video. Video people, I apologize, guys. I will just say this. Trey Lance, it's important to get quarterbacks that get fantasy points with their arms and their legs. Trey Lance has that ability. He has that dual threat ability. We know Kyle Shanahan has the ability to get fantasy points out of his quarterbacks. And so when Trey Lance becomes the quarterback of the 49ers, I think he is an immediate fantasy starter and very much worth drafting at the end of your draft and stashing on your bench because I think the upside is so big with Trey Lance in this offense.
Now let's talk about the running backs, which will include Trey Sermon in just a moment. They have a lot of backs in San Francisco right now. They've got Raheem Mostert. They've got Trey Sermon. They've got Wayne Gallman. Eventually, Jeff Wilson will be back after tearing his labrum. Michael Hasty, they claimed off of waivers and looked pretty good for them last year. Stefania, again, going back to you, what was your read on this backfield when you spent time at training camp?
Yeah, I think Raheem Mostert is the clear number one in the backfield right now. He's electric. If you remember, he had a couple of plays last year where he reached the top speed of anyone in the NFL. One of those was that 80-yard play in week two before he had his first injury, which was a sprained MCL, and then dealt with a high ankle sprain later in the season. So he only played in 8 games last year, 9 games in 2018. You mentioned the running backs. They have depth there. This is why they have depth. They've dealt with a lot of injuries at that position. So Raheem Mostert, again, leads the charge there, but they have to have insurance. And as Kyle Shanahan has shown us, he likes to use multiple backs and multiple receivers and kind of interchange those two positions when he can.
So the hardest part for me with the 49ers this year is that I think one of these running backs is going to wind up being of value. Because I think there's going to be stretches where, like, Raheem Mostert has like a 6-game stretch where he's just the clear-cut guy and he kills it, right? He will be Raheem Mostert. And then maybe late in the year, Jeff Wilson comes back and he has 4 games where he's useful. The problem is that, like, I could see any of them being useful for a given stretch, Matthew. So I think draft strategy-wise, do we think it's worth investing in somebody like Raheem Mostert? Or if you're going to go in this 49ers backfield, you say, you know what, just bank on the upside of someone like Trey Sermon, a 3rd-round pick out of Ohio State via Oklahoma.
Trey Sermon made my others receiving votes on my love-hate list, so he's one of my favorite late-round targets this year because I think his skill set is a perfect match with the kind of running game that they run in San Francisco. Having said that, Raheem Mostert's awesome.
He's really good.
Raheem Mostert is really, really good. Big playability. Thirsty Kyle found this stat. All running back. Raheem Mostert led all running backs in percentage of carries, getting at least 5 yards, minimum 100 carries. Like when Raheem Mostert's on the field, he's a big play waiting to happen. The problem is him getting on the field. He's missed 15 games over the last 3 seasons as well. For some reason, they didn't really use him a lot at the goal line last year. I don't know why that was. You saw some Jeff Wilson as well. Wayne Gallman's not a bad player either. It's a great offensive line. Shanahan always likes to use multiple backs. I have Mostert at running back 28. I love him. I love him as a player. But again, I think the concerns about the injury and the concerns about his usage are real. I think based on cost, Trey Sermon is the better investment. But I actually don't mind Mostert and Sermon if we get a sense of what this offense could look like. That's the problem. It's just every week it just sort of feels like it's rare that you know going into a week these are the 49er running backs you want to start.
Mm-hmm. Because
there are times where Kyle Shanahan has said this is the guy, and I believe he is genuine. I don't think he's a game player. He genuinely believes that, and then the game starts, and then the flow goes one way or the other, and the next guy is off to the races.
So let's move over to the pass catchers then, because there are 3, I think, of note, but potentially even more than that. We'll get to there in just a second, though. First, Imagine a nice vacation.
Ooh.
Is there a view of a parking lot? No. So don't book a cheap hotel. Book an expensive hotel for cheap on Hotwire. With hot rate deals, you can stay in nicer hotels than you ever have thought possible. Just like your city, neighborhood, and amenities, then get your hot rate. Better views, king-size beds, and freshly pressed waffles woven... freshly pressed waffles would be kind of weird.
Yeah, that would be good.
But freshly pressed waffle woven robes await you, and actual waffles as well. Download the Hotwire app now and book beyond your wildest means. All bookings final.
Did you know that Tony Romo is a motivational speaker now? All this football season, Tony and Corona are remotivating football fans to live the game day good life. Let Tony unlock your football fan potential at remotivation.com. There you can launch an augmented reality experience that will put Tony in your living room or at the bar next to you while you're watching the game. It's true. You can be better at watching football. Matthew, this is directly for you. Let Romo and Corona show you how to live the game day good life. Visit remotivation.com now. Please drink responsibly. Corona Extra Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now let's get to the pass catchers, because there are three, I believe, of note. And Stephon, you'll go back to you. Deebo Samuel missed 9 games last year, parts of 2 others as well. It was kind of a year lost to those 2 injuries. How would you assess the various pass catchers? And we'll include George Kittle for this exercise in that conversation.
Well, starting with Deebo, I mean, part of what makes him great is the way that he plays, but it's a little bit reckless. And that's he ends up with injuries as a result. You recall he had the Jones fracture and the surgery, so it delayed the start to his season, then ended up with a hamstring injury that cost him time later in the year. But he's electric when he plays. He was a playmaker at South Carolina. They love that about him. They love that he's got this edge to him, but it does factor into the possibility that he might not be available every single week. I think the most exciting up-and-coming receiver for me there is Brandon Ayuk. Yep. And I talked with him when I was out of camp. He missed 4 games last year. He had 2 that he was on the reserve COVID-19 list, 1 with a hamstring, 1 with an ankle issue. But don't forget, he came into the league in the COVID era, so he didn't have a chance to do anything at OTAs. He didn't even meet his teammates until he got to training camp, and that was his first opportunity to start to put the offense into play. Because of the injuries, he actually ended up getting more work than I think was anticipated for him. But the other thing he had to do was adjust to multiple different quarterbacks. So right now I asked him, how different is it for you working with Jimmy G versus Trey Lance? And he's like, doesn't matter. You know, as long as I go out and do what I'm supposed to do, it really doesn't make a difference to me. I just need to be where I need to be, because he got used to that last year. He came out of Arizona State, worked with our friend Coach Herm Edwards, and the route tree that he ran there really prepped him for working in a pro style offense. And don't forget about the wingspan. And I asked him about that and said, is that a real thing? Much has been made about how long your arms are. Does it really give you an advantage as a receiver? And he said, you know, I'm not the biggest receiver. He's just shy of 6 feet. He's not field tight. And he said, you know, wow. I can go. That was a compliment.
You know what? It's wow. That it's like it's spicy Stefania. Spicy Stefania today.
Am I right?
Like she brought the fire.
6 feet.
She did.
Yes. I'm about 6 feet as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And that was my point. A star athlete like Field.
Thank you.
And he did say, though, that a lot of people think that he won't be able to go up as high as the 6'4 guys and catch the ball. But the extra arm length actually, you know, might surprise people. That is what gives him an advantage. So not only going vertical, but also extending, diving for catches, et cetera. And don't forget, he scored 2 rushing touchdowns last year, too. So I think that there's a lot of growth potential for Brandon Ayuk this year. I know you asked me about George Kittle. There's not a lot to say there. The guy's great. He's uber talented. He dealt with injuries like the rest of the 49ers last year. He's 100% healthy. I think he will make some business decisions this year. I don't think that hurts his fantasy stock, but I think that he is going to be smart about how he plays.
No,
yes.
I would just like to ask a question leading into this, because the one thing that I look at when I see these two is Brandon Ayuk right now is ADP is wide receiver 23 and Deebo Samuels is wide receiver 41.
Yeah. Big gap there. That gap
is huge. And I'm not saying that we don't like Brandon Ayuk, because I know that Field, he's one of your guys and whatnot, but that's just too big of a gap, right? Between the, I mean, Deebo Samuels being underdrafted?
So, I think Debo's been a little bit underdrafted. That being said, my rankings don't necessarily reflect that feeling. What do you think, Matthew?
So I have Ayuk at 23. I have Deebo Samuel at 35. So I have, you know, I have about a 10-spot difference. I have exactly 12 spots between them. And I agree with that.
Hold
I think,
on. My rankings do reflect that. I'm crazy for a second. I have Debo at 28.
Wow.
Debo at 28. Yeah. You're all in on Debo.
Those drafts, you guys are all nuts.
Thank you. Doing?
So you have Debo higher than I do. You you and I are basically in the same area for Ayuk. You have him at 22. I'm at 23. I have Debo at 35. You have him at 28. I think there's a good case to be made for him being as high as you have him. I think people forget how good Debo was over the second half of his rookie year.
Totally.
And then he gets hurt, and then Ayuk gets a chance. But my concern here, Field, isn't about the talent. I think Debo Samuel is an insanely talented young man. Same with Brandon Ayuk. The concern is twofold, is that we haven't seen what this offense looks like at full strength. It's been so many injuries and so many sort of pieces. What does this offense look like with a healthy George Kittle, a healthy Debo Samuel, a healthy Brandon Ayuk, and Trey Lance under center? We don't know what that offense looks like. So trying to project that becomes really tough. Again, this is super small sample size, but last year, weeks four through seven, Debo Samuel, George Kittle, and Brandon Ayuk all played. And again, it's like very early in Ayuk's.
Yeah, too early for me to matter.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, weeks four through seven, in that small period here, Brandon Ayuk was wide receiver 43 per game. Debo was wide receiver 53 per game. Kittle, of course, tight end 1 per game. Yeah. There's a chance that we know this is an offense that wants to be more run heavy than pass heavy. Like, there's a chance that these guys eat into their target share a bit. We know that Kittle is going to be the focal point of that passing game.
Yeah,
they manufacture touches for both Debo and Ayuk.
Right.
Does it go to just one versus the other?
I believe what we just looked at.
They're super talented, though.
No, that's the thing, is that's what you have to trust here. I believe what we just, if we use 4-7 as our sort of window to look through going forward, I believe that is that's just like a failure of logic. Like,
no, it's one data point.
Ayuk can barely. Yeah, I know. I reject that data point. Like,
okay.
Super early on, Brandon Ayuk by the end of the season was a freaking rock star. The guy was unbelievable, right?
Right. But he also got a lot of volume because there was no one else
volume.
Left.
Yeah, I think there was plenty of volume for three pass catchers on this offense. I really, truly do. And by the way, like, talent hedge, and who knows what happens with Trey Lance as the quarterback when that eventually takes place. Like, who knows the heights of this offense? So I'm in on Debo Samuel.
I think that's a good note to end on. Who knows the heights of this offense?
Okay. I just, but you're asking why I'm a little less optimistic than you. We both agree in the talent. We both agree in the scheme fit. I'm just concerned that, like, there's a lot of, and it's a nice problem for San Francisco to have, but there's a lot of mouths to feed. And can this offense, which we know will be run heavy, will a run heavy offense that's going to have a pretty good defense and isn't going to get into a ton of shootouts, is that offense good enough to support three fantasy pass catchers plus a viable fantasy running back?
I think so.
Yeah. Right. Well, you obviously do, and I'm not as optimistic as you are in that particular case. Like, I do. Listen, I don't have them much. I'm 7 spots behind you on Debo, and I'm 1 spot behind you on Ayuk. So we're not that far apart.
Yeah.
But I'm not as optimistic as you, because I do think there's a lot of mouths to feed, and I think there's going to be one game, you know, it'll be a Kittle game, or that'll be an Ayuk game, it'll be a Debo. Like, I don't know that there's going to be a lot of games where all three are fantasy rock stars.
I think so.
That's my concern.
I think there will be. And Stefania, we have to close it out here. Let me ask you this. How many points and who are by, and who are the 49ers beating in the Super Bowl this year?
Wow.
Oh, let's see. I haven't even gotten that far. I don't want to jinx
Does
it
matter?
Field. I don't want
Doesn't
to jinx
matter who
it.
They play,
I just,
right?
Okay. No, I just, yeah. They look, their toughest competition
Bills,
might be right, I mean, there in the NFC West. It might be getting
themselves.
To the
I thought what you were going to say is like,
in the NFC West.
I thought you said that what's going to happen is after they beat the Lions in the championship game, in the NFC championship game, to go to the Super Bowl.
First championship game since 1990. Thank you
very much. There you go. Here's an interesting thing that I thought got sort of swept under the rug during that whole discussion, was the idea that Field's a good athlete. You know, I know Coach Raba, the legendary Coach Raba.
Yeah.
He lives in my hometown.
My college lacrosse coach, for those who are like,
yeah, sorry. Sorry. Yes. Field's college lacrosse coach at Wesleyan. And I remember talking, we were talking. He says, yeah, you work with Field. I'm like, yeah, listen, I got a question, coach. Just curious. Like, listen, just, you know, as a lacrosse player, how was Field? Like, you've coached so many kids over the years. How was Field as a lacrosse player? And he took a moment and considered it, and he goes, he's a really nice kid.
Hard worker.
He's a really nice kid. He said he really enjoyed coaching you.
Oh, thank you.
He said you were very, very nice. You took direction well. You listened Which all makes sense.
Playing two sports in college doesn't mean you play them well. Like, being on the team is a very different story. Matthew, I've never hid from that. Don't you worry about that.
Is Matthew's tennis coach still around for us to interview?
I doubt it.
Absolutely is. I can tell you exactly what he would say. But listen, I'm also a two-sport college athlete, by the way.
Yeah.
All right?
Like, sure. What were your sports?
Yeah, beer pong.
yeah.
Clearly.
You know, beer pong and wrestling.
Okay.
Like
wrestling?
Look, yeah. Just leave it at that. Look, I'm anyway. No,
here's, I just got a visual.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
No, that's a great place to wrap the show. I think
you have to go. We got to come back.
I'm entirely making that up. Here's what I would say is my college coach, my tennis coach is still around, and what he would say, the great Tommy Cannell, is that I was I never hustled, and that I rarely used my feet. He would constantly yell at me. I can, to this day, I can hear him as a 14-year-old. I can hear him yelling, "Move your feet, Barry! Move your feet!" Because I never moved my feet. But
and to
I
think
had,
we still yell the same thing today.
Hang on though. I had incredible focus. I had incredible determination and unbelievable consistency. Like, the way I played tennis was, you hit the ball 20 times, I'd hit it back 21. You hit it 22, I'd hit 23. Like, I didn't hit a ton of winners, but you never got it past me. I was always able to just keep the ball in play and just super consistent, and I just wore opponents down.
Yep.
Which, like, you know.
For those who are wondering why we often call Matthew Nadal down around the offices, that's why.
He's the Bill Laimbeer of the tennis court. That was a Matthew.
Just wear you down in the tennis court. Okay. All right, we got to go because it's past 12 o'clock, and we're already running a little bit late. That's going to do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow to take a look at the Los Angeles Chargers and the Las Vegas Raiders.
Peace out.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact. He's on TV every day. A spicy tomato who's got the stats and tweets that'll make you laugh. He's our favorite host and everybody knows his name. He's Field Yates.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.